All right, now the coach is here, we can start. What do we want to talk about today? I mean, that's not up to you. I'm saying, what are we supposed to talk about today? Evolution is a potential answer. I mean, if you were to poll the general public and ask them what Darwin is famous for, they would probably say that he came up with the idea of evolution, which is not actually true. There has been a sprinkling of humans throughout history who have put forth the idea of evolution. They've always been, up until recently, in the extreme minority. For hundreds of years, the prevailing thought was that all species were created simultaneously and species don't change. They reproduce, but that number of species hasn't changed, or it could get reduced by extinction, but new species don't come into existence. Species don't change along the throughout time. In other words, the prevailing idea was that evolution does not happen, right? Evolution refers to changes. Well, Darwin wasn't the first to say that evolution happens. And in fact, he wasn't even the first one to think about it scientifically. You guys have probably learned about Lamarck, right? Unfortunately, Lamarck is kind of ridiculed nowadays, which he shouldn't really be. What is Lamarck famous for? Well, before Darwin, he said that evolution exists, but what was different about him compared to the other ones before him who'd said evolution exists or species change? What is the new what? Well, no. What he is important for scientifically is that he was apparently the first one to offer a hypothesis about evolution. You know, so that's just to say that evolution exists is not scientific, right? For you to say evolution happens, you have to have a mechanism. You have to have a hypothesis that explains how it happens, because that's, remember, what a hypothesis is, an explanation. And so he should be credited with that, and is, for people who look deeply into the history, deep enough into the history, but usually he's kind of ridiculed simply because his hypothesis was way off. But there's no problem with that at all, right? That's part of science. That's why you bother to have experimentation to actually test the hypothesis rather than just putting them forth. But what was his hypothesis? Hypothesis about how evolution happens. Does anyone remember? It was this idea of use and disuse. And so probably the most famous example would be to explain how giraffes came to have their hugely long necks, right? They eat leaves off of trees, and they therefore try to get to high leaves during their lifetimes. And they're using their necks, they're stretching them during that time. That's the use part of use and disuse. And so used parts of a body, it's easily mostly explained in terms of animals, of course they're not the only organisms, get exaggerated. And disused or unused parts tend to get smaller, right? So Lamarck's hypothesis was basically that what happens to an individual during its lifetime gets passed on to its offspring. And so a giraffe who spent his lifetime stretching his neck is going to produce an offspring with that experience of stretching the neck already built into it, and then it will continue in the next generation in its lifetime. Right? That's not actually what happens, though, right? If this were true, for instance, you know how you make, well, I don't know whether any of you do, but when you, the art of making bonsai trees by clipping them and doing all kinds of things during the lifetime of that tree to keep it small so it looks just like a miniature of a full-grown tree of the same species. Well, if Lamarck were correct, if his hypothesis were correct, then if you created a bonsai tree by training it to be a miniature and then planted the seeds of that tree, you would get another miniature tree. But you don't, unless you train that next tree to also be small, right? You get a full-blown tree because what made it small was the experience of its lifetime. That's not something that gets passed on. Or similarly, a weightlifter should pass on huge, bulky muscles, right? If Lamarck were right. But that's not true. You have to build your own muscles in your own lifetime, and that's not passed on. So, it wasn't until Darwin that we actually were offered a hypothesis that turns out to be true, right? And so it's not that Darwin is famous for evolution, which most people would probably say if you polled them on the street. He's famous for explaining evolution by means of natural selection. And this also brings up the notion that evolution is a broader topic than natural selection. Natural selection is just one mechanism of evolution. Evolution, By the way, occurs, you can define it at different levels, but hopefully it's already clear to you at this point in your career that individuals do not evolve, right? What evolves are populations of individuals. What is a population, by the way? Scientific, biologically, what is a population? In the hierarchy of biological organization that you learned in Bio 181 probably, where you start with atoms, go up to molecules, molecules make up organelles, organelles make up cells, right? On and on, all the way up to the biosphere. What is a population? No, that's... If you say it's a bunch of organisms, then the zoo would be a biological population. Well, what do you mean by the same organism? Yes, a population is a group of individuals of the same species living in some place. Okay? How's that different from species? Well, a species includes all the populations, which might not be all in the same place. Okay. And by the way, what is the difference between a population and the next level up? Well, what is the next level up? Community, exactly. What is a community? It is a group of populations in a certain place. What's the next level up? Ecosystem. And how is... How is ecosystem different from community? That's exactly right. A community includes only biotic things, living things. Right? Some number of different species, some number of different populations. An ecosystem includes that community plus all of the abiotic things, things that are not alive. Mountains, rivers, whatever. All right, anyway, back to Darwin. His fame comes from his hypothesis that evolution occurs by means of natural selection, which is why, you know, the full title of his famous book is not just Origin of Species. It's The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection. That really points out the importance of his work. Well, there are three major mechanisms by which evolution occurs. Anyone know those three? There's one that you definitely should get. Mutation is involved. Adaptation is a result. The reason I said that you should definitely get this is because we've already said it several times today. Natural selection is one way by which evolution occurs. It's not the only way, though. Evolution specifically, at the population level, evolution refers to a change in the allele frequency in that population over time. All right? Allele frequencies refer to how many of what percentage or fraction of each type of allele for a given gene there is in that population. What are alleles? They're what? Well, yeah, they are variants of a single gene, right? Any given gene has so many different alleles, which are the different versions of that one gene. So for any given gene under study, we usually just study one gene at a time, ignoring all the rest. Evolution is occurring with respect to that gene if, over time, the frequencies of the two or more alleles for that gene change in the population. One becomes more frequent, the other becomes less frequent. Of course, there can be more than two alleles, but in the simplest case, right? That's what Hardy Weinberg is all about with it. P squared plus 2PQ plus Q squared equals 1, right? Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium. All right, well anyway, natural selection is one mechanism by which evolution can occur. But there are two other major ways in which evolution can occur. But since you didn't get the one that I already gave you, maybe I should just give you those other two. Go ahead. Fitness isn't actually a mechanism for causing evolution. Fitness just refers to how well suited an individual is to its environment. And by the environment, I'm really just talking about all of the biotic and abiotic things in the surroundings, right? Environment is not weather, for instance. Environment includes the other individuals of the same species, the conspecifics, individuals of other species, plus all those abiotic things like the air, the rocks, the temperature. That's the environment. But fitness doesn't cause evolution. Evolution can occur in such a way as to increase fitness. And in fact, that's exactly what happens when evolution is caused by natural selection. And that's the whole importance that I'm trying to get to by naming these three ways in which evolution can occur. The only one of those three that reliably leads to an increase in fitness is natural selection. And that's why we say that natural selection causes adaptive evolution. Evolution is adaptive only if fitness increases as part of that evolution. But it's not that fitness causes the evolution. All right? So what are the other two causes of evolution? What two other major events or mechanisms can cause a change in the allele frequency within a population over time? Hmm? That causes huge multiplication of genetic variation. That's why sex happened to be advantageous and why we still have sex, or why sex is still around. Because that takes... So I'm glad you put me onto this tangent, because there's three major mechanisms by which sex or the sexual reproduction method drastically increases genetic variability. And that is crossing over, random fertilization, and independent assortment. But they occur actually in the order: crossing over, independent assortment, and then random fertilization. That makes the number of possible versions of DNA a hell of a lot higher than it would be without sex, right? Because asexual reproducers just produce what, if everything goes right, would be an identical copy of themselves, right? Well, sex wouldn't work at all in increasing genetic variability if we didn't have some variability to begin with. Or if you think of it in terms of a deck of cards, if you have 52 aces of spades, doesn't matter how many times you shuffle that deck, everyone's going to get a hand of nothing but aces of spades. So there has to be some difference, there has to be different alleles to begin with for sex to multiply the number of possibilities by shuffling the deck. And what is that original source of all genetic variation? Mutation, right? So mutation, accidental changes in the DNA sequence, which can occur at a single base pair, or there can be chromosomal mutation as well. Huge chunks of DNA can get changed around. If you didn't have those accidents happening, just purely randomly, then sex wouldn't do anything, right? Sex would still make identical copies to the parents if everyone were alike to begin with, and we'd still all be that original cell. I mean, copies of it. So how did we get on this tangent? Oh yeah, we haven't mentioned the two other causes of evolution. Any other stabs? Yes, genetic drift is one. And what is genetic drift? No, but that's the third one. What do we call what's happening when individuals move to a different population? It can... related, but no, that's not right. Did someone else say something? Well, yes, that is what we call it when they move, but the name that I'm trying to get you to say is gene flow. So the three major mechanisms of evolution are natural selection, genetic drift, and gene flow. And the phrases genetic drift and gene flow are confusing because they kind of they seem to describe the same thing, but they're fundamentally different. Genetic drift is purely random, and this really just refers to some sort of accident that randomly destroys certain alleles. In other words, some number of individuals in a population get killed by something that has nothing to do with how well suited they are to the environment. You know, like a cow is grazing, comes along and steps on certain individuals of a plant. It's not their fault that they got stepped on, right? It has nothing to do with their fitness. They just get eliminated, and they therefore are not going to pass on their alleles. All right? So genetic drift occurs in all populations, just randomly, by accident, for whatever reason. But genetic drift's effect is much, much more pronounced the smaller the population is, just for mathematical reasons, right? If you have a tiny population, if you have only four left and one gets stepped on, you know, if you have four different individuals and they have they're unique, genetically unique, so they're not just copies of each other, and one of them gets stepped on, that has a huge effect on the overall population, right? Mathematically, 1/4. But if you have a billion and one gets stepped on, hardly noticeable mathematically. So genetic drift does always change the allele frequencies, but really you only notice it for small populations. Well, since it's random, genetic drift could increase the fitness overall of the population if it just happens to destroy the ones that shouldn't survive, but not reliably, right? That's just random. It could just as easily kill the most fit individual in the population, and therefore the next generation's population would not be as fit overall. So over time, genetic drift just oscillates back and forth between good and bad, and it doesn't lead to adaptation over time, because it does not select for a better version. And gene flow doesn't either, because gene flow just refers to alleles either coming into a population or leaving a population. That can happen by actual individuals leaving or coming into a population, carrying their alleles. But it actually can be alleles themselves be carried away, right? Like pollen drifting far away from a population. That's actually alleles, not individual diploid species. Organisms. Well, that's random too. And so it, just like genetic drift, does not reliably lead to an increase in overall fitness of the population. But natural selection does, because it is selecting. Now, using the word selecting implies that there is some consciousness to it. It's not, right? It's just the environment is selecting, simply because what happens to work is going to work better than things that don't happen to be set up properly to work in that particular environment. So what's behind it all is random mutation, total accidents, most of which are either neutral or bad for the organism. And if they are bad for the organism, then the environment's going to select against it by the fact that that individual with a low fitness is not going to have nearly as good a chance of surviving long enough to pass on its alleles to the next generation. In other words, if it doesn't reproduce, its lineage is now extinct, right? Unless you pass on your alleles, the lineage from that first cell that ever existed all the way to you is going to go extinct. Like I have chosen in my own life by not reproducing. On the other hand, if some random mutation happens to actually give you some slight edge in that particular environment, you're going to, even if it's a small edge, mathematically you'll have a little better chance of surviving to the point of passing on that good version of the gene, your more fit alleles, to the next generation. And so as this occurs over several generations, the population gets made up of a higher and higher fraction of individuals with the allele that confers greater fitness to those individuals. And so the population as a whole is evolving adaptively. The population is becoming more and more fit to the environment. Right? That's Darwin in a nutshell. So, as far as what you do today, it's very straightforward. It's exactly as written. We're supposed to have 18, but I don't think we have everyone here, right? We have 17. So let's work in six groups of three with one of those five groups of three and one group of two. All right? Doesn't matter if you're different this week compared to last or next week, but three is kind of perfect. Two is doable. You can't do it alone, though. And four is kind of overkill. So rearrange yourselves. But anyway, one thing I just want to stress on doing the procedure properly to get as good in numbers as possible is to not cheat at all. When you are the predator, and by the way, a predator eating prey is not the only way natural selection works, of course, but that's what we're just representing with our modeling today. Anyway, when you are the predator and it's time for you to eat prey, which are the little paper discs, if you don't actually turn around while you're not allowed to look like it tells you to do, then actually close your eyes until it's your turn. And as soon as you look at the environment, which are these pieces of cloth, just fix your eye on the first disc that you actually see and keep looking at just it. Pick it up. Don't look at the other things. Put it away and then close your eyes again. Okay? If you bother to do that, it will work a lot better, especially with the fairly small numbers that we're working with. But don't forget to change the environment. And why do we bother to do that in the model, in the final generation? Yeah, to simulate reality. I mean, if you want a good argument for against sex, if you want a good argument for asexual reproduction, it's that if you are already really well fit to the environment, why the hell would you want to mix it up, right? Sex is going to all but guarantee that your offspring are not going to be like you. And so if you're perfectly fit, you want to make identical copies of you because they'll be just as fit. The problem is the environment changes, and all if it changes drastically, suddenly, by some catastrophe, for instance, then those identical copies will suddenly be not fit, and the entire species would be eliminated pretty easily. So sex, by mixing it up each time, yeah, some individuals are going to be less fit than the parents, but even in the face of change, some individuals should be better than the parents. Okay, go ahead and do it.